We're going to do that one again just because I didn't have the camera set it right.
Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, once again, thank you very much for your continued support of this particular platform, Industrial Talk, because we celebrate industry professionals here on this platform. You are bold, brave, you dare greatly. You innovate, you collaborate, you solve problems. You are absolutely changing the world and making it a better place. That's why we celebrate you on this podcast, the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. That's right. We celebrate you. We are broadcasting on site. Accelerate 2024. Orlando, Florida is the location. And as I look down the hallway, there's a ton of people that just want to solve your problems. Right there. Just right there. All you have to do is reach out to Fluke Reliability. Find out more. All right. In the hot seat, Michael DeMaria. He's here. He's going to dazzle you with his acumen. Let's get cracking. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good, Scott.
Good meeting?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? You were here last year.
I was. Yeah, we
Come
were.
Come right in connect with you last year.
We did.
When?
Did we Somewhere do under the under the stairwell.
Did we?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. How come I don't remember?
We were a partner at that point. So we were developing hardware in conjunction with Fluke. And then Fluke said, we should just bring on this company. Right? So
that was it.
Zima came into the fold. Fits perfectly in between Proof Tech.
You were a Zima?
Yeah.
Doesn't it sound like an adult beverage?
Yeah, there's something like that. A Zima. Yeah.
Just
but you never stop with one, so it's got to be several Zimas.
Yeah, that's right. Right, you need more Zimas. Zima. Yeah. Before we get into that topic, can you provide a little insight in who you are?
Me personally?
Yes.
I'm the product manager for Zima DLI. I started in this role 30-some years ago. Actually, 38 years ago as a customer of Zima DLI first. I ran the vibration program on board one of the aircraft carriers
as
my secondary job, a nuclear engineer, and then I ran vibration analysis. And so that was a contract that DLI Engineering had, which became Zima DLI. And so, as soon as I got out of the Navy, I became the administrator for all the aircraft carriers. And so my background is really plant, operations, maintenance, around nuclear industry. And then predictive maintenance. How does that apply? How do you get benefit of it? How do you validate the data? How do you run on a very critical schedule?
It's a doggone city.
Oh, yeah.
They're just huge.
When I was in 8,000 people on board a
Shut
carrier.
The front door.
Growing up in Nebraska, it's four times larger than the town that I grew up in.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, you think of it. You have two huge power plants. You have an airport. Up above.
That's true. Yes. Aircraft carrier. Absolutely.
5 million gallons of jet fuel that you carry around. Pumps, compressors, refrigeration, several restaurants, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? So, all the operations that you would typically see in a city, all the things that you would typically see in a power plant, those are the same type of machines.
So. How much do the power plants produce? How many megs? What's the size? Because I don't know. Because of my background's power and utilities, I just want to know.
I'd have to think. It's kind of a
because I don't know.
Ago.
Sort of.
I wouldn't want to make it up because I'm sure that's in a
somebody's
going to
say.
Book of,
no way.
That's it.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, don't make it up. Yeah.
But sorry, that's classified.
It's classified. There it is. That's even better. Classified.
But classified. So moving on from that, I ran. All the training department, so educating customers on how to use our solution. And the key thing here is that ours is not here, we're going to teach you how to do vibration analysis. Here's how you do vibration analysis. When people look at our solution, we'd have to teach them on how do you train an automated diagnostic system. The whole background behind our software is the fact that we want the software to do all the heavy lifting of vibration analysis. So how does it identify the patterns? How does it identify what faults? How do they translate into faults? And then most importantly, what action do you have to do in order to mitigate that? So what's my priority? These are the machines that are going to fail, you know, quickly in the next week or so. And these are the machines that are super, super healthy. I don't have to do anything.
What was the genesis of it? Like, what was that conversation about why this was an important project to deploy?
Well,
outside of the obvious, but it's just an interesting, it's been around for 30 plus years.
Yeah, I think the genesis of it was we proved it out unknowingly at the beginning. So plants struggled to have their own technical staff to do vibration analysis at this scale. You know, this is in the 80s.
It's true.
We started doing vibration analysis in the 70s with, you know, the big carts and cables and tape.
Yeah.
Finding the technical things of what's going on. And our model to it, the way that we approach it, drastically different than everybody else. And so we would write a report, and we have to, you know, a receptionist that would type it all up. It'd get mailed back to, you know, the plant, the ships. And in it, we said, hey, these are the machines that have a critical issue. It's a mandatory recommendation. You have to do this repair, and this is the repair. And these are machines that have serious, that are you should be really thinking about. These are the ones that are, you know, it's a moderate issue. It's desirable that you do something, but you should plan for them. These are things that are just a marker, a slight fault. It's an indicator as an analyst to find root cause, start figuring out the trend, how fast is it propagating. And these are your healthy machines. Don't touch them. And what happened was the plants received that, and it was like a month by the time the mail made it to a ship. And what happened was all the machines that we said, hey, you should do these right away because they're going to fail.
They failed.
Failed, yeah.
Because it took a month to get the information. It's like, yeah, no kidding. Yeah. It's right there. Yeah, it did.
Wow. No other better way to validate your credibility by having, you know, that's what you said and this is what happened. So then the serious one, well, they took certain very seriously. We have to do something with them. But what that got them thinking was, well, what about all these ones that have a moderate issue, something that's starting to develop? Can we do something more to understand when do we need to do that? We can't wait another year or a year and a half until another big survey comes by with some, you know, the technical group.
Right.
So can we develop something that we can put in the hands of non-analysts, technicians, operators, people who know the machines the most, and that they can capture the data? And then, you know, we can send the data to an analyst. We don't have to send the expensive analyst out to the plant. We can send the data to an analyst, geographically diverse anywhere in the world. And so that was the first model. Simplification of the data acquisition part. And then the second part is, can we then deliver some immediate understanding? So here's this data.
Right.
Can we run it through some sort of diagnostic engine? Can you develop a rules-based system that says that technician or operator on the plant floor could get a immediate understanding of what needs to be done? And so that's where we started.
And did you compress the time from 1 month to how efficient was that process?
Yeah, so now that there's a simplified data collection system that you don't have to have a lot of training. A ship's crew turns over all the time. So you have if you have a plant that you can't keep your staff on hand, especially the very technical vibration analysts that are in high demand. So how do we simplify that in a way that a technician or operator, the ones that are more stable within your plant, who know the most about the machines anyway, how can they collect the data very quickly and simply? So yeah, instead of once every year, year and a half, getting a snapshot, now you have it at least once a month, somebody's capturing data. And so now you see that slight fault, and now you can gravitate, how fast is that progressing? What's the trend? And you can always go fast, you can do it faster. Hey, my machine's that healthy, I don't need to look at it every day. But if a machine starts developing a fault, well, now let me see if I can extend that So if you think about the operations, I need to get to the next availability period, the next time I'm going to have a repair cycle on my machines. That's what you're trying to get to. Can I extend the operations of this in a way? Maybe limit it its time and its cycle.
Right.
Switch to my backup machine when I can, things like this. And say, yeah, now here in 6 months, yeah, I can make it 6 months. I'll start monitoring it more frequently because I can. It's just simplification of data. Nowadays, you know, of course, we can put sensors on the machine that'll do that for us. But can I get to that next availability? So one of the, I think the cool things, we were talking about managing spare parts inventory.
Yeah.
Right? And we'll talk a little more about that in our sustainability sections tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is, in this example, a plant, in this case where I came from, carried tremendous amount of inventory on spare parts. You're out in the middle of nowhere, right? So right. how do we ensure that we can repair anything? Right? All the unknowns, because you're just wanting reactive. So you have to carry a lot of spare part inventory. Well, now you don't have to. If you can see a fault that's developing, maybe your critical machines, obviously you'd want to be able to be safe and have those type of parts. But your randomness of all the different bearings you have in a plant, think about how many machines you have in a plant,
yeah.
So how many bearing types you have to carry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so order it in time, right? So I have months of warning that I have a fault that's developing. I can trend it and see how fast that's propagating. And so, yeah, let's order the parts now. Let's plan for the repair. Let's figure out when is it going to get into the cycle. It's the safest approach, right? They have an understanding about what we need to do. You can have your briefing. You can have everything lined up, ready to go. So the amount of time that it takes to get the machine back in service is relatively short. I don't have to wait for the machine to fail and then start figuring out what to do.
Yeah, the goal would be to try to pinpoint it right before its failure. So you sweat the asset in a way that you optimize it. You don't spend the maintenance dollars or whatever, but you spend it at the right moment, at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
With the right solution.
Right.
Not something we think it's this.
The right attention to the right person, to the right time, with the right parts. Right. You've lined everything up to as best as you can for the success.
So with that said, so we understand the history and where it came from, and those are critical assets on a aircraft carrier. They are.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to be out in the middle of nowhere and things happen. And I would imagine there's some real strategy behind inventory, the parts that you want to carry on a on it. You know, these are critical, this is not so, whatever it might be, these we can sweat that. But with all that said, it's evolved, it's grown, it's changed, right?
Sure.
So where do we stand today with it? What makes it so unique?
Well, the big difference is now how much data that we have. Right? So we have amassed a massive data lake. We have 100 trillion data points in our data lake. And it's all tagged. So make, model, machines, results, actual findings. And the cool thing about it is every time we identify, when we deliver a result of a report to our customer, if we've identified something that is a serious problem or extreme problem, we have analyst commentary. We don't just blindly say, hey, the system says this, do it. We have justification, a human review of that data that says, hey, this is why, this is what's been going on. This is our personal evaluation from the professional analyst that we have.
Right.
So that's all captured. So the couple of things that we can do, I think, is really kind of fascinating, especially when we start thinking about how we can put AI into all of this, is filling in all those gaps. So how many vanes do you have on your pump? I don't know. I'd have to pull out the manual.
Right,
how many
right.
teeth are on the gear? It's probably not even in the manual. I've had customers who said, okay, we want the info. And so they're opening up the covers and trying to count.
No kidding.
You need that info. If you don't have it, you can't really analyze for those types of machine faults. So you'd have to have those details. And so that's things that we can then leverage. Let's run all of that through our data lake, see if we can identify using logic and AI tools.
So what in your data lake, let's say I have a a ball door buffer and or a ball door motor, sure. And it's this particular brand or
make a model.
Make a model. Here's the nameplate on it. With that many points, you probably have seen it.
Yeah, right. Or something very similar to it. Yeah. So run that through our diagnostics tool, our AI tools, and it'll spit out, hey, we think you have 56 motor bars with the probability of, you know, this one. This might be this one. This is 30% probability it could be this answer. So then you can start, you know, a human would come in at this point, make sure it's validated, be more, you know, supervised as opposed to just blindly accepting what it comes up with. I mean, get there.
I think that's cool.
Isn't
that, human component.
I think at this point in where we are in the AI world, it's important to make sure that you still have a human component in the mix somewhere. And we see this a lot where people are looking at a vibration solution and it's, you know, you hear AI and ML on everything, but you don't want to make a $1 million repair decision based on just some output.
No.
Some human should come in and say, oh, look, you have a ski slope. That's not even good data. Right? Or the machine's not running. So you're putting a lot of autonomy in vibration analysis now with sensors and how data can get just kind of travel and flow and try to get into systems. But at some point along that path, somebody should absolutely look at the data before making decisions.
Oh, I think that is a great example of how AI and the human component work together. What it also does, from what I understand, makes my job, the human side, more efficient.
Yes, absolutely.
So it leverages my knowledge, my skills, and it directs me to the right. Well, it's like, here, look at this. This is what we got. Look at it. Validate that it's that way.
Yeah. I think when people talk about AI, you have kind of two camps of the ones that are kind of pushing back a bit. One is it's being forced upon us, and I don't think we're ready. We don't know if we even know what it is. I can spell it, so that's a plus, but beyond that, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it. And the other one is this is all going to come take our jobs.
No.
And so that's not where it's going to go. I believe it's going to be something more, an enabler for you to be more effective in what you do.
See, you can remove the AI title from it and just say this is a tool. This is a data lake. This is information that is valuable data, valuable to you and your organization. And what we'll do is, like, we've got that history. Boom. You can at least begin the process of being able to pull that information. It doesn't have to be AI. It just has to be the fact that we're able to leverage that information in a way that makes you operate more effectively.
Yeah.
Makes sense, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So where do you see it going?
The
next shoe to drop. What is it? I mean, this is relatively new, by the way.
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, we're in Industrial 5.0 coming, right?
But yeah, see, that was fast.
I know, right? Four was last year.
Four was just, yeah, like, wow, really?
I was thinking of it as, like, we've been in a hunter-gatherer stage for a little while. You know, you're putting, there's the IIoT, which are kind of the precursor to four-ish.
Yeah.
Is now, well, we want to capture data. We definitely know that data is very valuable. The more data
it's
you
huge.
Have.
Huge.
We don't necessarily know what to do with it, but we need to capture it. So you can't start out with we're going to do something with it unless you have it. But now that we have it, well, then I think that if I try to break down four versus five, I think four was coming up with what you're going to do with it, and five is just putting this new powerful thing, AI and ML. Right.
Yeah, you know what? Because data is everything, and everybody's collecting data, and there's gold in that data. Whether it proves to be that or not, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to take everything I can possibly take.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to bring it in. It's the storage. It's the power associated with how do you continue to pull in all of this information, this data, store it someplace. The cloud, it's huge. These server farms, you know, they're just massive because they're just, it's phenomenal. And then in the case of the vibration, you're pulling in tons of data.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Just tons.
If you're doing
it someplace.
If you're doing it right, it should be tons of data. And there's a risk here where we've started kind of dumbing down the kind of data that you're getting.
Yeah.
And I've asked this question within my audiences to say, does more data equal better results? And that's not true. If I'm not capturing data in a way that doesn't capture a frequency range, for example, that can see the gear mesh frequency, well, I'm blind to it. Now I'm blind to that information. We were having a table discussion earlier, and the question was kind of being asked of, would you rather have kind of this false information or no information at all? And it was clear answer. Huh. Nobody wants to have the false information. You feel like you're way more at risk because you're just kind of, I don't know, if you're being kind of led along or the like, or you're going to make a bad judgment at this point.
Wow.
So you've seen a lot of systems that want to just give you a quick indicator, but that's not helpful in a plant. You really need to have, you know, an understanding about what I need to do. What's the priority? What's the actual action that I need to take?
See, I think the secret sauce too is, of course, that human component, but it's taking that tsunami of data, vibration data, mm-hmm. and then being able to clean it up a little bit and saying, okay, this chunk of data you don't need to see. You know, this chunk, go over there. This little slice, this is important. We see it that it's important based off of whatever our algorithms, whatever the criteria is. And again, making my life more efficient. But you have to keep all that data because that data is important. But I only have to see this.
Right, right.
But all of this eventually will be valuable in some way, shape, or form.
So you have 100 machines in a plant. How many of them are going to be faulty?
Yeah, I don't know what the percentage.
15-ish maybe percent.
Yeah.
So that means 85% of your machines, if you're doing manual analysis, you're consuming some resource that has to look at that data. So that's an AI tool, right?
Yeah.
So anything that's just mundane and repetitive, great. Automate that. So our systems just push that along. If we're going to fail, we want to fail as a false positive and not a false negative. So there's no exact science in vibration, right?
Yeah, it's
still, there's a lot of different ways a machine can fail and lots of variables that can lead into it. So, you'll have to plan that you're going to fail one way or the other. So we fail positive. So we don't want a machine to fail without us saying something. So often, most of the time, our analysts will just kind of steer the course a little bit. It overstated it that you have a really bad bearing problem. It's a bearing problem, but you still have a little bit of time. Or it came up with drive-in bearing, and it's actually a free-in bearing. I don't know, something like this. So we've identified, hey, something's going on. The system might overstate it, but that's where you human comes in. And let's make sure we put this into context with everything else that's going on in the plant to make sure that it's right and the like. Isn't that cool?
It's so, cool stuff.
Man. So it's tons of, and if you go into the new world of now we're capturing data every day as opposed to every month, you still need to have some human look at those 15% of the machines.
You do.
So again, if it's a repetitive task, a mundane repetitive task, a machine has a fault today, and tomorrow we're going to capture more data, we didn't do anything, so the machine still has a fault. But now I don't need a human still. This human already did his or her job and steered the course. And so now we can just use automation to say, if the data looks the same, no changes in the conditions, and the analyst said, hey, you should do this instead, we follow suit. We have something called persistence logic. They persistently look at what was happening before, what has the human kind of steered the course before, and make sure that nothing has changed and then continue that forward.
Cool stuff. How do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of you? They say, hey, I want to get a hold of you.
Oh, contact us at Flip Reliability.
Are you out on LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn.
You active on LinkedIn?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
We're going to have all the contact information for our friend Michael out on Industrial Talk. We are broadcasting from Accelerate 2024. Oh, see, I went to 2023. It's 2024. And it is a collection of problem solvers like Michael. Reach out to him. He will not be disappointed. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
How about that for a conversation? Michael De Maria, Fluke Reliability, Azima is the product. The event was Accelerate 2024. It's a mouthful to unpack, but it all happened there at Accelerate 2024. Incredible product. So take this product. It has all this history in vibration, and then to be able to pull that knowledge out so that you can make better decisions. Yeah, yeah, it's powerful. It's robust. It's got a lot of horsepower behind it. And he's been a part of it forever. Not forever, but anyway. Industrial Talk is here for you. I say it all the time. We'll go out to Industrial Talk, connect with me, see how you can amplify your voice, be a part of the network, the Industrial Talk Network, and, increase your following. Do what you need to do to make better decisions, too. All right, be bold, be brave, dare greatly. Hang out with Michael. Change the world. We're going to have another great conversation shortly, so stay tuned.